KZFR.org. Let's do that again. Streaming online at KZFR.org. With me is co-host Danny Toms. Danny, please let our listeners know what we have coming up.
Well, on today's show, we'll be sharing an essay by Jean Bauer in honor of Earth Day, the news of the Animal Legal Defense Fund Coalition challenging the constitutionality of Iowa's newest ag-gag law, and ending with news of a vegan charter school in Florida that has been denied access to the federal lunch program for refusing to serve dairy. And if time permits, we might even have some bonus news about a proposed fur ban in the Big Apple, New York City. Jimmy, take it away.
Thanks, Danny. All right. For our first piece, I wanted to share a nice essay about Earth Day from Jean Bauer, who is, of course, the co-founder of Farm Sanctuary, which we wished a happy 33rd birthday to last week. Earth Day started in 1970 in response to growing awareness and anxiety about the negative environmental impacts of human activities on the planet. Unfortunately, despite various efforts and accords like the 2016 Paris Agreement to address climate change, the habits of our species have continued to wreak havoc on Earth. Excessive consumption of meat and other animal products is causing profound ecological harm, and most of us are unwittingly complicit. The United Nations has warned that animal agriculture is a major contributor to our planet's most significant environmental threats. Here are just some of the ways that a meat-heavy diet is damaging the planet. Producing wheat requires inordinate resources and vast swaths of land. In the U.S., 781 million acres are currently dedicated to growing food to feed farm animals. This is not grazing land. This is growing food like soybeans and corn to feed farm animals. While less than one-tenth as much, the 77 million acres, is used to grow food directly for people. And as on a side there, as the mad cowboy Howard Lyman says, farmers should be feeding people, not animals. Agriculture, especially the mass production and slaughter of animals, is reshaping Earth's biosphere. Scientists say we are now living in the Anthropocene Age, a geologic epoch dominated by human activity, and a fossil record that will be marked by chicken bones and plastic. A study published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences found that 70% of birds on Earth today are domesticated, and most of those are chickens. Just think of that, you know. We're coming at the end of the migration period when all of our northern waterfowl have been hanging out in our central valley for the winter. They're flying back up, and most of them have left by now. Those seem to be huge numbers of birds, if you look up. But, in fact, they're just a minute portion of the actual number of birds on this planet around this
morning. If you every three songbirds you see in a tree, there's seven chickens in a cage, I guess.
That is a very good graphic, yes. In a cage or in one of those barns, slowly growing to fill it up as their bodies fill up with muscle or breast meat for some other people to eat. An astounding 96% of birds, in the case of mammals, just 4% live in the wild. An astounding 96% are domesticated, mainly farm animals. We are destroying nature and exploiting billions, trillions if you include fish, which causes intolerable suffering to both human and non-human animals and harms the earth. Large farms can produce more waste than some U.S. cities. According to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, a farm with 800,000 pigs could produce over 1.6 million tons of waste each year. That amount is 1.5 times more than the annual sanitary waste, sewage, produced by the city of Philadelphia. So just think about that. We touched on it before. We talked about the issues of nitrate runoff from, I don't even want to call it like pig operations, right? Pork operations that are going on in the southern states. And these farms are not required to build sanitary sewage treatment plants, wastewater treatment plants, like human cities are. They're just allowed to basically contain that waste in a pond so that the moisture can evaporate out until its proper amount of time has passed, which is all regulated. It is all completely legal to be then remixed and spread onto fields.
Yeah.
It's
or until the next next big flood comes along, which is about every 5 years now over there. So
that too, of course. 80% of all antibiotics sold in the U.S. are sold for use in animal agriculture. In order to prevent the spread of disease and to enhance weight gain in the crowded, filthy conditions of confinement operations, producers feed farm animals a number of antibiotics. Upwards of 75% of the antibiotics fed to farm animals actually ends up undigested in their urine and manure. Through this waste, the antibiotics may contaminate crops and waterways. We don't talk about much about antibiotics. I think we've talked a little bit about antibiotic resistance from a couple of experiments that have been, researchers have been done looking at kind of like epidemiology of various resistant bacteria causing various human illnesses. But we don't, I don't think we've ever really talked about the massive quantities of antibiotics that are produced by pharmaceutical industries that is dedicated to animal agriculture.
I wonder how many people who are afraid of vaccines continue to eat animal meat that's laden with antibiotics.
Oh, no, I think that those folks eat only happy meat. Yeah. Animals that wanted to die, that were well-treated and had only, quote, one bad day. Give me a break. Animal agriculture is responsible for more greenhouse gas emissions than every car, bus, train, boat, airplane, and any other mode of transportation on the planet combined, according to a report published by the UN Food and Agriculture Organization. According to the same report, animal agriculture is responsible for 37% of all human-caused methane emissions. And methane, in particular, now we've talked about that, that's a product of ruminants. So your cows, your grass-fed beef, those critters are putting out a lot of methane as part of their biology, part of their digestion. And methane is a more potent greenhouse gas than carbon dioxide. It's shorter lived, it breaks down eventually, but while it's here, it causes way more disruptions with the climate. The good news, goes on, continues Gene Bauer, is that we each have the power to make an immediate difference in our daily actions by eating plants instead of animals. Shifting toward plant-based agriculture would significantly lighten up our ecological footprint, cut back on greenhouse gas emissions, and help preserve wildlife habitat and increasingly scarce natural resources. A 2019 report from a panel of international experts concluded, a large body of work has emerged on the environmental impacts of various diets, with most studies concluding that a diet rich in plant-based foods and with fewer animal-source foods confers both improved health and environmental benefits. And Jumar concludes by saying, when we consider the state of our Earth, there can be a tendency to feel powerless and upset about our inability to make a positive difference, which is why it's so important to focus on what we can control, such as what we eat. We are empowered when we eat food and support an agricultural system that is aligned with our values and interests, and that supports ecological responsibility. Day by day, these incremental dietary actions add up, and collectively, we can make a world of difference. So happy Earth Day to everyone. Take a step back, look at that plate, maybe cut back on some of the bacon, cut back on the eggs, cut back on the cheese. That is something within your control.
Yeah, indeed. I think, you know, there was some recent Facebook discussion from some of the local activists intersecting on this issue, you know. And depending on where you're coming from, you can react strongly to this, you know, from sort of a social justice point of view. You can point out it's classist or racist to say you shouldn't eat meat because, you know, native people should be able to eat their native diets, and maybe poor people can't afford it. So, and we don't debate that. Typically, when we're talking about this, we're talking about the bulk of people, which is the middle class white Americans, for lack of a better word, and other, you know, people around the world that are these sorts of conspicuous consumers of meat and cheese, and also have the money and the wealth to eat a little bit better. And that would account for, I'm sure, with the bulk of these numbers.
Oh, yeah. This is not... It's the middle. It's the common, most common way of eating, right?
Yeah.
It
wasn't the most common 50 years ago or 100 years ago.
No, certainly not the amounts that we're eating now. Right. That the society is producing now, that the society is marketing now. This demand for animal products is, as we've talked about before, is a managed demand. It's one that's inculcated
this is never paid for. Such as slamming piglets into concrete floors and confining animals in cages so small they cannot stand up or turn around would inevitably damage a business's reputation. We talked about that last week. The wildlife kind of refuge that was serving eggs or something, or they're serving food and getting protested. It's a bad analogy if I can't remember.
Australia?
Yeah, maybe. Similar case where light was shed on it, and they're like, "Oh, we have to go out of business," but they went out of business because nobody wanted to eat at such a cruel place. Returning from my tangent, that didn't work very well. Animal Legal Defense Fund Executive Director Stephen Wells says that, quote, "Factory farms want to hide their abuses, and in some states, lawmakers have been happy to help by passing ag-gag laws."
And I want to pause right there, and I think if you are consuming animal products, consider whether you yourself are happy to ignore the conditions under which that food was raised.
Yeah.
Right? If you're not paying attention to it, this goes even with grass-fed and humanely raised agriculture, animal agriculture, where what we talked about before, there's standard procedures that go on in all of animal agriculture. For instance, castration of steers without anesthetic. If that's something you can, if you're trying not to think about that, it puts you in the same class as these factory farmers. Like really, this industry that doesn't want you to think about the conditions as much. Those animals.
Cramming your grass-fed cows into semi-truck trailers and shipping them in 100-degree heat without food or water to the slaughterhouse. And going back to a couple weeks ago, we talked about how the Trump administration is going to now allow pork producers to be their own inspectors of the low quality of their food. Health and safety of their food, and you couple that with ag-gag laws where you're not allowed to go in and look at the food, and what you're going to get is a lot of sick people. It's just scary. Undercover investigations have a long and treasured history in this country and serve as one of the few avenues through which the public receives critical information about animal agriculture. Iowa's previous ag-gag law achieved its goal of suppressing undercover investigations, which ceased when a law went into effect in 2012. Iowa's first ag-gag law was the fourth to fall, however, nationally. Animal Legal Defense Fund led successful challenges in Idaho and Utah, and litigation is pending against ag-gag laws in North Carolina and Kansas. See if you can figure out any similarities in these states. In each of these victories, the courts have recognized that even deception is protected by the First Amendment, lest we give the government the power to throw people in prison merely for the white lies often necessary to gain access and shine a spotlight on factory farm abuses through undercover investigations. So you have no undercover journalism of any time in any field, in any sphere for drug undercover investigation or any type of thing if you extrapolate it, what they try to do with these gag laws.
Which is why it's a nice coalition.
Yeah. The plaintiff coalition is composed of the Animal Legal Defense Fund, People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, Center for Food Safety, Iowa Citizens for Community Improvement, and Bailing Up NG.
Yeah, and the ACLU is participating to provide legal support, lawyers to help take care of the paperwork that involves that is inevitably follows with this kind of litigation.
Sure.
So thanks. Yeah, the behavior of this industry is kind of what I wanted to highlight. Which is like you've lost in the circuit, at the highest court level, and yet the industry comes back and keeps trying to pass these ag laws.
Because of the nature of government subsidies and lobbying, they have the money to continue to file these frivolous lawsuits because they get so much money kicked back to them in various ways.
You've been listening to Animal News on Non-Human Radio on KZFR 90.1 FM, listener-supported community radio, co-hosted by Gina Cusino and Danny Toms. If you want to follow more current events and animal-related news, I invite you to follow the Non-Human Radio Facebook page, and certainly please get in touch with me. If there's a story you want covered locally, I'm happy to research it, and we can cover it and shed some light on what's going on locally. Our next news story, I want to report on, pass on a report from Veg News. Veg News reported on the Florida-based King Charter School, which hopes to become the nation's first public school serving an entirely vegan menu and having a corresponding curriculum. The school has encountered an unexpected assembly block, though, regarding eligibility for meal reimbursements under the United States Department of Agriculture National School Lunch and School Breakfast Programs. Federal regulations stipulate that the program participants, quote, cannot discriminate against the drinking of cow's milk before school, after school, on school grounds, or at any school-sponsored events. This means that the school may not be able to receive federal meal reimbursements unless it makes dairy milk available to the students, right? That doesn't say that the students have to accept the dairy milk. It has to be there. Maria Solanke, who is the founder of the King Charter School, told Veg News that, quote, we know how harmful it is for kids to be drinking milk, and even the American Medical Association put out a memo telling the USDA to change guidelines for 2020 due to the high levels of lactose intolerance in African Americans and Asians. She goes on to say, the worst part is that they refer to plant-based milk as beverages and make the nutrition requirements so hard for a plant-based beverage to actually get reimbursed under the federal school lunch program and become plant-based. And because plant-based milk is not subsidized like cow's milk, it is more expensive, right? It's that double-edged sword.
Yeah.
Cow's milk is cheap, and it's also protected by these USDA federal loop school lunch regulations. So it's in this ideal sweet spot that makes it very hard for a plant-based milk, even if it meets whatever criteria they're using, that it has to be as good as cow's milk, probably protein levels. Even if it does that, it's going to cost more. And so, it's just a mess. Solanke is currently allowed to serve a fully vegan menu at the school and has been working with a legal team to get the cow's milk requirement changed by the USDA, is raising funds through a GoFundMe campaign to avoid needing the federal reimbursement, right? So that's how you get around it. You have a big enough budget so that you don't need the reimbursement. Though the school is not required to take the reimbursement, it does take a financial risk by not accepting such. That was a Veg News article about a small charter school trying to get off the ground in Florida.
Yeah, I wonder if the good news or the bad news is that, the targeted amount of money for school lunches per student is sort of abysmally low anyway, so they could probably raise it to cover, it's something like $2 or $2.50 per student. I wonder if they could just put out like 5 milks.
Yeah, right?
How many have to be available?
I wish them luck because I know that's been an issue at preschools.
Yeah.
I've seen all over the country news about schools that are trying to be able to provide plant-based milks to their kids, and they're not able to afford it.
And I believe the USDA and the government has lots of nutrition grants and healthy nutrition education and stuff, which I know about from some folks.
Yeah.
And all of them are forced to teach the MyPlate, include the dairy aspect, because that's who's funding them. They can't just not do it.
that's the other part of this puzzle, right, that we've talked about before, is like how much education, early age education is straight from animal agriculture.
Yeah.
All right. And so we do have time for one last story, and that is going to be on New York City. We talked about fur bans in San Francisco, L.A. Well, the burgeoning movement to outlaw fur is now seeking to make its biggest statement yet in the fashion mecca of New York City. Lawmakers are pushing a measure that would ban the sale of all named fur products in the city where such garments were most common. The style centers, including Marilyn Monroe, Jacqueline Kennedy, announces Joe Namath, and Sean Eddie Combs all have rocked furs over the years. A similar state measure would impose a statewide ban on the sale of any items made with farmed fur and ban the manufacture of products made from trapped fur. The members of the fur industry said such bans could put 1,100 people out of a job in the city alone. Supporters of the ban dismiss that and emphasize that the wearing of fur is barbaric and inhumane. The fate of the proposals could be decided in the coming months. However, supporters acknowledge New York City's measure has a better chance of passage than the state measure. The fur trade is considered so important to New York's development that two beavers adorn the city's official seal, a reference to early Dutch and English settlers who traded in beaver pelts. At the height of the fur business in the last century, New York City manufactured 80% of the fur coats made in the United States. According to Fur New York City, a group representing 130 retailers and manufacturers in the city. The group said that New York City remains the largest market for fur products in the country, with real fur still frequently used as trim on coats, jackets, and other items. If passed, New York would become the third major American city with such a ban. San Francisco's ban takes effect this year, and in L.A., a ban passed this year will take effect in 2021. Elsewhere in Sao Paulo, Brazil, began its ban on the import and sale of fur in 2015. Fur farming was banned in the U.K. nearly 20 years ago, and last year, London Fashion Week became the first major fashion event to go entirely fur-free. Fur industry leaders warn that if the ban passes in New York, emboldened animal rights activists will want more. Would that be such a bad thing? Supporters of the ban contend that fur industry employees could find jobs that don't involve animal fur, noting that an increasing number of fashion designers and retailers now refuse to sell animal fur, and that synthetic substitutes are every bit as convincing as the real thing. They also argue that fur retailers and manufacturers represent just a small fraction of an estimated 180,000 people who work in the city's fashion industry alone, and that their skills can readily be transferred. I imagine that 1,300 people, it's no fun for those 1,300 people,
yeah.
But in the scope of the entire economy in New York City, it's really not much, and even 180,000 in the whole fashion industry, it's not that much.
It's if you can sew fur, you can sew something else.
You've been listening to Animal News on Non-Human Radio on KZFR 90.1 FM, the listener-supported community radio, co-hosted by Jeannie Trezano and Danny Thomas.
Thanks, Jeannie. Now it's time for the Chico Vegan Animal Rights Calendar events. Get out your calendars, get out your pens. Over to you, Jeannie.
Thanks, Danny. Okay, we have a couple of great vegan-friendly events to put on your calendar. And if you need more info, please send me an email at chicovegan@gmail.com or check the calendar at the Non-Human Radio Facebook page where you can also contact me. April 25th, coming up this Thursday, Plant-Based Chico will be meeting on Thursday, April 25th. From 6 to 8 p.m. at the Chico Guild Hall at 2775 Old Nord Avenue. They will be screening the newly released documentary Code Blue. Code Blue documents lapses in the current state of medicine and provides a common sense solution by featuring the practice of lifestyle medicine to prevent, manage, and reverse chronic diseases. The film documents the hurdles to the proposed shift, which are antiquated curricula in medical schools, confusion in the media, inadequate government policies, and the underlying influences of the pharmaceutical and food industries. For more information, check out the Plant-Based Chico Facebook group. The Chico Vegan Potluck is being held on Saturday, April 27th at 6 p.m. at the Chico Public Library on Sherman Avenue. And as always, Plant-Based Chico will have a table there for Whole Foods plant-based goodies, and then there'll be lots of other stuff. I think I'm going to make some bars, some orange bar, like lemon bars, but only with orange, I think. Okay. You can find public details and the schedule for the whole year at chicovegan.com. on Sunday, April 28th, 2019, from 4 to 5 p.m., Chico State Philosophy Professor Dr. Robert Jones will give a talk about his contribution to an extensive amicus brief to the New York Court of Appeals in support of legal personhood for two chimpanzees, Kiko and Tommy, in a case brought by the Non-Human Rights Project. The topic of the talk will be, should chimpanzees be considered persons? The talk will be held on Sunday, April 28th, from 4 to 5 p.m. at the Chico Women's Club at 592 East 3rd Street. The talk is part of the Chico State Eileen L. Smith Anthropology Museum's World Explorations Lecture Series. And finally, Chico for Animal Rights will be holding its last meeting of the semester on Wednesday, May 1, from 5:30 to 7 p.m. on the Chico State campus and Holt Hall, room 170. Community members are welcome to attend. If you are interested in animal rights, activism, veganism, meeting other animal lovers, or free vegan pizza, please plan to attend. For more information, check out the Chico for Animal Rights Facebook page. And I'll go for one more item. That is coming up on May 5th, Sunday, May 5th, a no-cost microchip clinic will be held on Sunday, May 5th, sponsored by the Canine Connection and Friends of the Chico Animal Shelter. That will be held from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. at Sarah Richardson's Canine Connection at 10 Seville Court, Chico. For more information, you can call 345-1912. This is free microchipping. It is one of the most effective ways to make sure if your pet gets lost, someone will be able to track back that animal to you. Okay, well, that is it for the calendar. Danny has one last piece of business to close out today's show, and that is the Animal Rights Quote of the Week.
Today's Animal Rights Quote of the Week is from New York State Assemblywoman Linda Rosenthal, who said, quote, "Cruelty should not be confused with economic development. Fervor relies on violence to innocent animals. That should be no one's business."
All right. This has been Non-Human Radio, a production of KZFR 90.1 FM, Chico. The views and opinions expressed on this broadcast are those of the hosts and do not reflect the opinions of KZFR, its board, its volunteers, its underwriters, or its staff.
We do, however, reflect the opinions of our non-human fellow earthlings who would rather not be killed and eaten, farmed, hunted, raised, experimented upon, skinned for their furs, and otherwise abused.
Our theme music is Ready to Fall by Vegan Activist Rockers Rise Against. Please stay tuned for KZFR's weekly public affairs program, The Real Issue, coming up next from 6 to 7 p.m.
This is Danny Tom, the Gina Trezino, signing off. Until next week, be different, be better, be kind.
Hey, go vegan. Chico, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond.